This morning I want to talk about the cultivation of emptiness, of silence, and of love. And to start by putting it in the context of our silent, heart-based meditation practice. We practice very simple heart-based meditation. And like all meditation, it's designed to still the mind. The ego is no longer present, so one can begin to experience a reality beyond the ego and beyond the mind. And we are taken into this plane of the self, the realm where the higher self lives and is in connection with the broader reality of the divine in a much more direct way, outside of the confines of the ego, the confines of this dense physical reality. And we're taken into this space like being dropped into an ocean, not knowing where we are being dropped into, not knowing what the water is, but just aware that we are being taken somewhere else. And over time, one becomes more aware of where one is being thrown into. One becomes acclimatized to being able to be present to the vastness of that plane of existence. And one moves from a state of dhyana to a state of samadhi. This is one part of the spiritual journey. One becomes conscious of the plane of the self, and one is no longer asleep as a human being, but more fully awake. Fully awake on all levels of reality. And this is the journey that all mystical paths go on. Sufism from forgetfulness to remembrance, from fana to baka, from the state of annihilation to the state of merging, to the state of being asleep to being fully awake, from separation to union. And as one makes this journey over one's life, one begins to learn how to cultivate the experiences that one has. Meaning, you don't just wait for the love to arrive, you learn how to cultivate love. You don't await for the emptiness to arrive, you learn how to cultivate emptiness. You don't wait for the silence to arrive. You learn how to cultivate silence. You know how to work with these experiences. At first, you must be given them. You walk towards them and they walk towards you. Just like you walk towards the divine and the divine walks towards you. There is a meeting. But you learn to cultivate love. You learn to cultivate emptiness. You learn to cultivate silence. And you do this in all aspects of your life. But the meditation practice is like a foundation. It is like a pillar, a center in which one learns how to do this. It is a central discipline. Just to wake up every morning and to put aside time to be in a space of silence and attention and remembrance to cultivate love and to throw one's thoughts into that love and to go into that space each morning. And if one has the time to be able to do it again in the day, to again do that. It is like a pillar that holds up one's day, that holds up one's life. This disciplined practice of sitting in a space which is not about you. Yes, you are working to still your mind, to bring yourself into a space of emptiness. You are trying to cultivate this, but you are doing it for a purpose that is beyond yourself. This is one of the first real fundamental lessons one must learn, is that any real spiritual practice cannot be done for oneself. You are doing it because you are offering yourself to the divine. It doesn't mean that you just sit there waiting for grace to be bestowed upon you. You have to offer yourself through your effort, through your hard work, through your attention, through this cultivation. But you are not doing it for yourself. At the beginning, this is abstract. This is hard to really take in, to understand. But once one begins to have experiences of the other, in the capital O, the other, one senses what it really means to try to create a space that is not about oneself. It is no longer abstract. You see that there is a space you are being invited into. Even if you can't understand it because you were just thrown somewhere in a space of unconsciousness, you come back with a taste of something that is beyond yourself, and you are left with that. It's like you've just been thrown in that ocean, and the next thing you know, you wake up and you're wet, and you have no idea how you got wet. Those drops are still glistening on your skin, and you feel that immense space that you were in. You don't know what it was, you don't know where it was, and you don't know how you got there. And that other becomes more tangible. In the same way that when you are able to experience that other in waking consciousness, an experience of oneness, it can be fleeting, it can be just a brief connection with the wondrous expanse of the living world, and it's just this taste of the other, the sweetness of the other, an expanse of the other, and you realize it's not about you. And that orientation, that shift is so important from being about us to being about the other. That is really at the core of what in the Sufi tradition we call adab, etiquette, how one orients oneself in all of one's behavior, inner and outer, always towards the other. And so that cultivation of love, that cultivation of emptiness, that cultivation of silence, it is being done for the sake of the other, so you can be in relationship to the other, so you can be surrendered and in service to the other. So that as one makes the journey towards God, one slowly bows down along the way. Just like you are acclimatizing yourself to being able to experience the reality of the plane of the self in a state of dhyana, you are also slowly bowing down before God. Each day, a little bit more. Each day, a little bit more surrender. Otherwise, the whole journey is about you. And then you think, oh, at the very end, then I'll give it all up. No. One does it slowly. One is dissolved slowly. One bows down slowly. One surrenders slowly. And this is done through this cultivation of emptiness and love and silence. Because the more empty we are, the more that we can be filled with the other. The more that we can experience love, the more that love can dissolve the boundaries between you and the other. The more that we can experience silence, the more space there is to hear the voice of the other. In all the myriad forms, the inner forms, the outer forms. And this silence is much more than just the hallmark of what it is to be a Naqshbandi. To have an inner zikr, not an outer vocal one. It is a state of the silence of the heart. What does that mean? That there must be a space in the heart. Silence of the heart, poverty of the heart, emptiness of the heart. That there is a space. And a primary way to cultivate this silence is to sit in silence, forced then to face the noise inside of us. To sit and confront our thoughts and to drown them in love. To have that silence be an experience, not just of the absence of noise of one's thoughts, but the presence of what fills that space. That's why I loved that way of describing silence from this man, Gordon Hempton, who spent his life recording the sounds of the living world, that silence was not the absence of noise, but the presence of everything. And of course, he was speaking about the non-human world, because what the human world, just like our thoughts do, they just overtake us. Dominate us. We dominate ourselves with our thoughts, and we dominate the world with our actions. And the cultivation of silence allows space for something other than ourselves to be made known to us. And it is something that must be cultivated. It's something that must be practiced. One does not become a master of silence overnight. One has to learn how to create a space for silence to exist. And that practice of sitting in silence, of creating a space of silence inside our hearts by immersing our thoughts in love and letting that love envelop us in an experience of silence. Brings us into a space of emptiness where we can experience presence. And love is more than just love. It is love and emptiness and silence and presence and so much more. And if we orient ourselves from the very beginning of our journeys and remind ourselves daily as we continue our journeys that this practice of sitting and trying to drown ourselves in the love in our hearts that helps us grow this space inside of our hearts and our being, a space of emptiness where we can experience silence, is not about us. It expands our ability to be present to what that means, not just as we sit down to do that practice, but as we go about our lives and our days. We can use the foundational practices on this path to orient ourselves about how we can live in every minute, every second of our lives. The experience of meditation does not end when one gets up from meditation. It continues. Ultimately, the space of meditation, dhyana, samadhi, it is not only what happens when you sit down in a space of silence. It becomes a continuous experience. Just like when one is in a continuous space of remembrance, you become a continuous vehicle of prayer. You are merged in a state of remembrance. And it is the same. You become merged in a space of silence. You become merged in a space of emptiness. You become merged in a space of love. You learn how to function outwardly while you are merged in those spaces. And when one sits down to meditate, one can go more deeply, fully into that space. But it is like you are always there. You are always walking with your feet in the water on the shore when you are awake. And when you go into meditation, you walk into the depths of the ocean, but you never leave that space. And our consciousness is a very powerful thing. Our attention is a very powerful thing. This orientation that is not about us can be a very powerful thing. It just needs to be repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated. Just like the zikr, one repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats the name of God so that you are transformed. And each time you utter the name of God on your breath, you are reminding yourself that it is not about you because you are offering yourself to something that is so much greater than you. And when you sit down to meditate, you sit down regardless of how you feel. Whether you feel tired, whether you feel grumpy, whether you feel stuck, whether you feel, doesn't matter what you feel. You put yourself to the side and you offer the space that you are creating to somebody else, much greater than you. And even at the beginning, when it is abstract, it is an orientation that you place yourself within. You You may have no concept really of what the other is, of what God is, of what the divine is, but at least you are pointing yourself towards what you do not understand. Then you will realize that you'll just spend the rest of your life walking towards what you do not understand. And then if you're lucky, you'll get to experience what you do not understand. But at least you are orienting yourself towards that. And orientation is a powerful thing. Because how you are placing your attention shifts how one performs whatever one does. How one does whatever one does shifts with one's orientation. And so if one is sitting down in this space to cultivate love with the orientation towards the other, the ability to perceive the other grows because your gaze is towards the other. It is not towards yourself. It is like this basic experience we have when we stop projecting ourselves onto every experience of life or person that we encounter through our day. And it's a very different experience when we stop projecting and we learn how to stop projecting ourselves. And we realize that, oh, it is a very different person. A very different way to walk through nature when one is not walking on one's own hologram that you are projecting onto the experience of you walking in nature, but just walking in nature, not projecting yourselves onto that experience. It changes things. The orientation changes things. One's ability to perceive silence, to perceive love, to experience love, to be taken into spaces of emptiness, it changes from our orientation as much as it changes from our effort. They go hand in hand. One can be the most disciplined person in the world and be able to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and meditate for hours and never have a problem. But if one's orientation is never towards the other in the real sense of what the other is, then you become a very disciplined meditator, a very good meditator. But for who? For you? For your process? And for the mystic, it always has to be about the other. Otherwise, it becomes spiritual gymnastics. And if you look at the gymnast is firm and toned and can jump up really high, and the Sufi is fat and lost in God. Because he's been too busy focusing on the other to worry about what he looks like. We do it for our sake. We can only go so far. And we are just living in the spiritual ego. And it is a waste of time. So we always put our attention towards God. It is the hallmark of what it means to be a mystic, to be a Sufi, to put one's attention always towards God. And it requires so much because we have no idea what God is. Requires vulnerability, requires letting go, requires following something that we can barely see, we can barely touch, we can barely taste, even when we have cultivated the abilities to experience it. The blind are leading the blind into a dark room. And yet, that's all we can do. And this cultivation of silence, this cultivation of love, this cultivation of emptiness that happens as we sit each morning, each afternoon, each night if we are lucky, and if we sit in the right space before we go to sleep, then we orient ourselves towards the other so that even when we sleep, we are in a space of meditation. Sure, one sleeps, one has dreams, but somewhere it is not so different. Because the orientation that we place ourselves in changes how we experience and are able to experience. And as we sit in that space with the right attitude, there are these experiences that unfold for us. This growing understanding of what it means to be silent. And when you have heard that space of silence, it is deafening. There is so much presence there. There is so much music there. It is filled with voices we have never heard before. And what we experience inwardly is also present around us outwardly. The power of a mystic is to harness the ability to go within to change how we are able to perceive what is outside of us. We go within to change. We go within first. We do not start from the out and work our way in. We start from the within and work our way out. We do not block off the world. But we recognize that real change comes from within. One can learn to listen to the voices of a living world. One can learn how to perceive the many voices that are present there by stilling one's mind. And just being present to the voices that exist there, and to let those voices wash over you. But for the mystic, we can go within and really cultivate silence that then allows us to perceive those voices on many levels. The mystic wants to know where those voices came from. Because when you know where something comes from, you hear it very differently. You've experienced where it comes from. You know the source from whence it came, the home that it belongs to, and you are also in that space. You are not separate from that source. And silence and emptiness and love, they give one the ability to make that journey towards source, truth, essence, roots. It is through silence and emptiness and love that one makes the journey there and begins to experience that essence. And then one's listening, one's way of being change. And there is this thread of love and connection that exists between the worlds. A thread of love and connection that exists between the worlds. And the importance of a very disciplined meditation practice with this orientation is paramount, because the world is incredibly, incredibly noisy. We live in a different era than the era of Bahauddin, growing barley, milling barley, baking bread, making pots. We live in the world, in a noisy world, where silence is a rare commodity. Outer silence is a rare commodity. To be able to actually just listen to the voices of the living world without our dominance present is a rarity. One walks into the most remote forest, in the most remote part of the world, and one hears an airplane soaring overhead, just like one is soaring overhead right now. The landscape of silence has changed. It is harder and harder. It requires more and more of us to recognize the power of what our discipline can offer us. It's not fair in many ways that we have to be always bombarded by this noise of the world. How many images each day are bombarded upon us on our phones or whatever medium that we come across? Images, images, images. Noise, noise, noise. Bye, bye, bye. And so we have to work harder to cultivate silence. Silence not just in terms of noise, oral sound, sonic sound, but the silence of not being bombarded by images. Because we need first to cultivate that space of silence so that we can see, so that we can hear. And that does not mean I'm saying we turn ourselves away from the world, we stop watching the news, we stop, you know, being just a human being in today's world. We can't. We also must be present and bear witness to what is unfolding in all sorts of ways. But we must not be consumed by it to the point where we are unable to cultivate the inner silence that is required both for our own spiritual journey back to God and also our ability to be in relationship to the myriad connections and relationships of life that unfold all around us. And what is remarkable is that when one has actually learned how to cultivate silence, it stays with you. Just like when one has learned to cultivate love in the heart, when one no longer needs to sit down and try to remember someone who you love to bring that feeling of love into your heart. You sit down, there is space, the love is there. The love is there. The silence is there. It requires your attention, your daily tending. The practice is a daily tending, a daily nurturing, just like the orientation is. But it changes the ability of how one can live one's life. Because one has this vessel of protection, this vessel of being that surrounds you. I'm not saying it's not impermeable, it cannot be overwhelmed. The grief that we experience, war, suffering, pain, they are going to find their way in. But we have this space of silence, this space of love, this space of emptiness, this vessel, this container that allows us to be who we really are, inwardly and outwardly, and not for our own sake, because we are not creating some sort of vessel of protection to go through the world in, ignoring the world, protecting ourselves from the world, cutting ourselves off from the world. No. It is through that container and that vessel that we are able to relate to the world as it really is. Otherwise, we are just blown left and right, drowned out by the noise, consumed by the images. But that container is a container of something that is real, something that is true, both for us, our truth, and also the greater truth. And that container, what is real, connects to what is real in creation. Because we are that container, we are that space, we have that silence inside of us, that love exists inside of us, that emptiness exists inside of us, and it is able to relate to the love and the silence and the emptiness that exists in creation. We are able to perceive reality in a different way. Reality is able to perceive us in a different way. The relationality that is possible shifts. One is no longer walking through the forest, projecting the experience of walking through the forest, thinking that it's good for me to walk through the forest. One is just walking through the forest. Presence, attention, in that moment, just being there. Your ability to perceive what that reality is changes, and the ability for the forest to perceive you changes. And the remarkable thing is, the living world does pay attention to us when we are able to pay attention to it. And some of you have had these experiences. And they're not just animal encounters. They are a recognition that comes from someone else that we are in a relationship to be able to perceive them. It's like the wind is talking to you. The bird is singing to you. That coyote that stops in its tracks and looks at you, it is looking at you. But it is different than how it might have been before. There is an exchange. There is an understanding. There is an appreciation. There is a connection. And it has nothing to do with the mind. It is a shared space that that world intuitively understands and recognizes. And we have forgotten how to recognize it. It always recognizes us. We have forgotten how to recognize it. And I really think that this time we are in of great change and unraveling and destruction, it must force us not only to be practical in how we conduct ourselves as spiritual human beings and as mystics, but perhaps to even more directly reorient the nature of our practices and the way we conduct our lives, because the need has changed. The need has changed. The situation has changed. Before, one did one's practices, one lives one life as best as one can. The same things happen. The human being becomes more permeable, the ego disperses, the orientation towards God must always be made. This always happened. But there wasn't the same emphasis and attention. There wasn't this cry of despair, this lack of recognition. The human being was not as cut off from that reality. The need is much greater. And I think that can be tremendously helpful, to recognize that the need is so much greater, because it helps us orient ourselves even more so than we used to. That it is not about us. When you walk through a landscape in remembrance, doing the zikr, you are paying homage to what exists. You are not just grounding yourself through the breath in your body, walking through with this cycle of remembrance, these threads of love being woven between you and the earth to help change you. You are paying homage and honoring what is at a time when it has been forgotten. And that is a need to remember what has been forgotten. We have to remember what has been forgotten. This manifest form of creation has been forgotten. It is no longer considered sacred. And we have this duty, this fundamental duty to remember that, that it is sacred. To do everything we can in our beings to remember that it is sacred. So when we sit down in our rooms in the morning to meditate, we have to hold in our consciousness that we are also in that moment orienting ourselves towards a space that can help us be in remembrance to what is sacred. It changes us inwardly. It brings us closer to God in all sorts of forms, including what is right in front of us in the physical reality each and every day. Mysticism is not or, it is and. It is and.